Welcome to the REM Breakdown. Hey, it's JD here, and I'm joined as always by my friend Rico Borrego to discuss the work of influential American band REM. Every week, we're going to explore a different song in the band's catalog, working through the discography in chronological order to better understand just why this four-piece is considered so seminal, innovative, and downright awesome. So there's that. Talk to me, Rico. How the hell are things going this week?
Oh, they've been going good. I have a question for you.
Hit me.
What do you think of carnivals?
What do I think of?
Carnivals.
Carnivals in general.
In general, oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a great question. I don't Circus, know that I've ever really been to a carnival. I've been to a fair, and I've been to an exhibition, but a carnival fits somewhere in that realm, but I don't know that I've been to a proper carnival.
They're weird. I've only been to one once, and I was when I was really young.
Yeah.
I want to say it was probably the Ringling Brothers.
Okay.
And it's weird. It's, I've been to fairs too. I went to throughout all my childhood. And fairs are fun because there's rides and fair food and stuff.
Yeah.
But a carnival's weird. Like when I went to it, you're just like, everyone's kind of sitting like it's kind of like a concert the way it's set up, like in a circle. And you're just watching, you know, these people do weird things in the middle of the arena, you know, like,
wow,
are there
animals?
Yeah, there was an elephant, I remember.
So it's sort of circusy then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if there is a big difference between a carnival and a circus. I kind of see them as, you
similar.
Know, similar things. I mean, like, I feel like
circus
when
is a carnival of sorts.
Yeah. Oh, I like what you did there. but yeah, they're interesting. I think you see them a lot in movies and whatnot, and
yeah,
you see, you know, like there was a movie a couple years ago, Nightmare Alley, I think, where I think it was a remake with Bradley Cooper, and like the movie revolves around like a carnival, and there's like psychics and, you know, the strong men and the people like doing like the acrobats and stuff like that.
Right.
And,
right. And they're lady.
Yeah. They're interesting. And they kind of make up the song we're going to be talking about today.
Interesting. Yeah. That's far out. So we've really spilled the beans here. Although the title of the episode Spilled the Beans First. We're talking today about Carnival of Sorts, parentheses, Boxcars.
Is this a favorite of yours? Is this one that you
Dude,
like?
This chorus is so catchy, and I love the way they design this chorus with Michael singing the first two parts, and then Mike Mills and somebody else. I don't know who.
I think it's
talk
Bill.
About it afterwards. It's Bill, yeah?
I think so, yeah.
Doing the middle part and then Michael coming back to do the end part. It's just so, oh man, what word, addictive, right? Like it's toe tapping and it's just, I could listen to it all day.
Yeah. And it's kind of hypnotizing. it's, I will say this, it's a song that before we did this episode today, I had kind of mixed feelings on.
Oh, really?
But after this last week, doing the research and giving the song multiple listens, I've really come to appreciate it.
It's my third favorite song on the record, I think.
I think now for me, it's also my third favorite.
Yeah, the first side of this record is it slays, right?
It does, and this is the last song on the side one of this EP, the Chronic Town side.
That's right, that's right. Then we get to Posters Torn.
Which,
that makes me wonder if there was a third side to this record, would it be called Reaping Wheel?
You know,
because
that,
he mentions it in the same phrase.
That is a very interesting thing. I didn't think about that, but yeah, I mean, a lot of their albums will take lyrics and make them the sides, the, you know, side one and side two of the album. I also noticed too in this song, like, there's a lot of, he says the word diminished, which way down the road on Up, they have the song Diminished. And then, you know, we'll get more into the lyrics here in a bit, but he's in the chorus, he sings Gentlemen Don't Get Caught. And two episodes ago, when we were talking about Wolves Lower, one of the lyrics in that song is Don't Get Caught.
Interesting.
So you got a little bit of, you know, connections here between songs and titles and lyrics.
I like that connective tissue, right? Like it makes for a collection of songs that are not just arbitrarily chosen, but perhaps, you know, strung together for a reason.
I completely agree. I mean, I think, again, you and I being such a massive fan of the Tragically Hip and Gord Downey, you know, he would do that all the time with his lyrics. And
that's right.
And I like it too when bands have like things that they sing about a lot, you know. You know, for me, one of my other favorite bands, Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder is always singing about the ocean and the water and waves and surfing.
There's a lot of ocean imagery in Eddie's lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it's kind of cool. And, you know, and even R.E.M., they have other, you know, they have multiple songs where Michael Stipe is singing about honey.
That's right.
And alligators.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, alligator. And I don't know if it's a Georgia thing or not, but I think it's cool. It gives them their own kind of, you know, like, I just like thinking of a band having their these common themes that they go back to, you know, album after album.
I think sometime during the course of this podcast, we need to visit Athens. You and I need to do like a road that trip and visit Athens and maybe even record an episode from there or something. That would be fucking cool.
That would be great. Yeah, I've never been.
Me neither.
To be fair, even though I've lived in the United States all my life, I probably have only been to 5 different states in total.
Oh, okay.
I'm not only traveled missing a lot. 5. What was that?
I'm only missing 5.
Oh, you're only missing 5?
Yeah.
You know, which 5 are you missing?
I don't know right now off the top of my head. I'd have to look in my journal.
I'm missing,
I know Alaska though, for sure, because I've never been to Alaska. Yeah, I've never been to Hawaii. So those two.
Yeah, Hawaii is like number one on my list. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Well, but Athens first, then Hawaii.
Yeah. I mean, and just like how I want to go back, now that I'm such a fan of the Hip, I want to go back to Canada because I've only been the one time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, come. I'll take you to Kingston.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So with Carnival of Sorts, I will say that I found a little information where maybe what inspired this song.
Okay.
So as we said, it's the last song on the Chronic Town side of Chronic Town. In 2019, Michael, he was doing press for the Monster reissue.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that the lyrics for this song and the song Circus Envy off Monster were both inspired by the carnival scene in the 1980 movie The Elephant Man, directed by David Lynch.
Get out of here.
Now, I've never seen the film.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what the carnival scene in this film is. But yeah.
I don't recall it off the top. I have seen the movie, but I have a terrible memory. And my only guess would be, right off the top of my head, is that at one point the Elephant Man becomes sort of like a carnival sideshow type thing, or, you know, that's how he's viewed as carnival sideshow.
That was my guess too, from never seeing in the film and only knowing, you know, a little bit about the Elephant Man, which, funny enough, I think the first time I ever heard of the Elephant Man was through the Bare Naked Lady song, If I Had $1 Million.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Another Canadian cut.
I know, all these Canadian references.
Yeah.
But yeah, so supposedly that's where this song and Circus Envy get their lyrics from.
Interesting.
But I did a little bit more digging.
Yeah.
And there happens to be another movie from 1962, a horror film called Carnival of Souls.
Really?
Which sounds very close to Carnival of Sorts.
It does.
And it also has like scenes with like this woman, you know, traveling and moving to a place where there's like this like pavilion that used to have a carnival, but now it's like abandoned. And like when she drives past it, like she sees like this like imagery of this like guy's face and a mask. And again, have not seen the film, just did some reading on Wikipedia, but you know, Carnival of Sorts is not a, like a phrase, like a, you know, it's something that Michael like made up.
That's right.
Carnival of Souls is so close that I'm like, I wonder if, you know, he saw that film and saw The Elephant Man and, you know, kind of put those two things together for the lyrics for the song.
That's fascinating. Oh, so, if only we could talk to him.
I know. Yeah. I mean, this, I would love to ask about specifically this song because it seems like there's some, you know, hidden mystery there that, you know, and I mean, it could be coincidence. It could be, who knows, but.
Wow.
So, but other for that, I mean, that's the only, you know.
Nuggets that you got?
Only nuggets besides just, you know, after we listen to the song, dive it into the music itself and the lyrics. I will say that the band played the song 190 times live.
Oh, wow.
A lot in the 80s. And it was funny, when I was doing some research for another song of theirs, I noticed that they stopped playing the song around 1985. And then on June 25th, 2003, they brought the song back into their set. Now, it wasn't like they were playing it again every night, but in 2003, they brought it back, played it a couple times on that tour, and then brought it back again in 2000, I think in 8, when they did those Live at the Olympia shows, where they were playing a lot of older material. So, but from 1985,
I had seen them live.
2003, they didn't play it. So,
damn.
Yeah, I know. That's when it comes to this band, that's a huge regret. Is me not getting into them early enough to where I could have at least seen them on the 2008 tour.
I was into them, and I remember they played a free show in Toronto at Dundas Square, the formerly named Dundas Square, and it was something that I was going to go to with my two friends, but I ended up, I suffer from mental illness and depression, and I didn't know it at the time, but I was in a real funk, and I stayed in bed all day. I didn't go downtown and see them, and I didn't think that that would be my last opportunity, but it was one of the last opportunities I would have had. One of them. They came back again.
That's the thing. You always think there's going to be one more time, you know?
That's like, right.
You know, unless they announce, because, you know, a lot of, you know, they did not announce, you know, until the last album was released that they were breaking up. So unlike these bands like Motley Crue or Kiss, who are always like, oh, this is our last tour. And then they tour 10 more times, you know, like, and there never was that moment. So it was like, oh yeah, they'll come back, you know, in a couple years after a new album and I'll catch them. And it didn't happen.
Do you think they'll ever do a reunion, or is it done?
I think it's done.
What do you think?
I think it's done. I know that, I don't know what year, if it was like 2016, I think, the band did get back together to play one song for their manager.
It was at a wedding or something, wasn't it?
It was a wedding or a birthday, or some event that had to do with their manager.
Right.
And it was just like, it wasn't like a public thing. It was just, you know, like for a select group of people. But other than that, you know, I know there's been, you know, Mike and Peter are, I think they have like a side band, I think, or they've done shows together. I know Bill will pop up every now and again, but I think they'll only do a one-off for a special occasion. I don't ever think there'll be another tour, but I could see them if it was an important enough cause or something.
Yeah.
I could see at least maybe the three of them. I don't know if like Bill would partake, but like, I can see them maybe getting back together for a one-off, but, you know, like let's say there was like another Live Aid or something.
That's right.
And it was very important. I could see that.
Okay.
But I don't think Because every time they get interviewed, Michael or Mike, you know, for these reissues and whatnot that they've been doing over the years, it's always, that's the last question that always gets asked in the interview. You know, are you guys ever going to come back together? And they're like, no, we're happy with what we're doing. We're all doing other things and we don't hate each other. We just, we think we've said all we wanted to say, you know?
It's really a unique position for a band to be in to do that. You know, like not a lot of bands hang their hat up at the end of the day. A lot of them continue to tour. And I'm looking at you, The Who, and I'm looking at you, The Rolling Stones. you know, you're 80 years old, might be time to sit down. Even though the last record, Hackney Diamonds, was not so bad. I don't know that I want to see them live, you know, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. There's some bands of even that I like where I'm kind of like, you know, I think maybe your best days are behind you, you know.
Right.
At least when it comes to recording new music. I mean, some bands can still sound great live. Hell, Billy Joel's still out there performing music.
That's right.
He, although actually as of the recording of this episode today, he actually released his first song in like 2 decades or something.
That's nuts. Oh, I'll have to give that a spin.
It's pretty good. I heard it once this morning. But yeah, like he still tours every year, but he doesn't write new music, you know?
Well, when you have a catalog like his, you know.
Yeah, you don't really need to.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
Well, speaking of a great catalog and speaking of spinning tunes, what do you say we play Carnival of Sorts, parentheses, Boxcars?
Sounds great to me. Let's give it a listen.
Let's do it.
The secret.
All right. Well, that was Carnival of Sorts, Boxcars. What do you think about this song? Is this a banger? Is this a song that, you know, deserves to be a fan favorite? Or is this like a deep cut? Is this like, you know, it's good, but it's...
No, I don't think, like, okay, so based on a couple things. So based on what you told us before the song about them reintroducing it into their set in 2000 or 1993, to me, or was it 2003?
2003, yeah.
2003, okay,
so it went a long time.
It went a long time, but clearly it was something they liked, and clearly it was something their fans liked. They played it, you know, 150 times. That's a lot for a band that, you know, toured a lot in the 80s, but didn't tour so much after that. For me personally, I think I love the clean guitar, but the chorus gets heavy, even though the guitar stays clean. I love the bass line. Like, it just sounds like he's dancing on the fretboard there, like at times, like there is just some great, you know, bass licks in there. I love Michael's tone. And as I mentioned before the song, I think that that chorus break is really quite the hook, especially with that vocal phrasing, you know, just real cool.
Yeah, I think this song, the hook is the chorus. Like, that's the part of the song that really draws you in.
Yeah,
I will say the song starts off very interestingly, like, different kind of than any REM song. It starts off with that carnival kind of like creepy sounding music.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what you call it, but yeah, it sounds like you're in this like hellish carnival. And then you get those, that, you know, bass riff from Mike and Bill's really energetic drums. And then, you know, you get launched into the verse of the song. And I have kind of a question, because when I listen to the verses of the song, especially like Peter's guitar tone, it still has that like kind of jangle sound, right?
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, playing those like nice kind of open chords, but the tone of the guitar sounds a little bit more dated. It sounds more like 80s, more than like Guardian of Night or Wolves Lower. And it gives me like hints of like other bands, like almost like The Cure, even though I don't know a lot of The Cure's music. Like, it's, this song kind of feels more like a band like The Cure than almost REM in a sense to me.
I was going to say the guitar tone to me reminds me of like The Byrds or, you know, something in the early 70s, like where there's like not the 70s, not the Black Sabbath, the Zeppelin 70s, but like that real clean sound. I guess The Byrds are sort of the 60s too, but just that real clean sound, like no distortion. And like you said, the open chords, it just rings, you know, and it sounds very simple, you know?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think this song in particular too, Peter's, there's not a lot of riffs going on.
Right.
Unlike Guardian of Night, and other songs we're going to cover like on Murmur, like it's a lot more straightforward. And at times I really feel like it's Mike's bass line that is almost playing more the melodic melodies. And that's the other, besides the chorus, I think Mike's playing is phenomenal on this song.
I do too, yeah.
Like it's
I really thank it.
Yeah. It's what really pushes him and Bill, because you get that pre-chorus where Michael's singing Gentlemen Don't Get Caught.
Which is
that
great.
First time he sings it, it's the drums are straightforward. But the second time he sings it, Bill starts doing this kind of like double time feel and does like a little fill that kind of brings you into the chorus.
That must be why it feels heavier to me, the chorus.
Yeah. The chorus almost feels like they're going faster than before. Like, I think the drumming just makes it sound like it just sounds heavier. It sounds a little, the chorus is fantastic. I mean, to me, I like the verses, and I think with the early stuff, Michael tends to repeat a lot of the, like, there's really only one verse and one chorus lyrically.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot on this EP and even on Murmur. But I'm okay with that because there's still a lot of dynamics in the song.
Yeah.
Even like I noticed this morning, I was listening to the song again, and like that intro, Like, it's great because it sounds very dark and mysterious, but like when the verse kicks in with like the guitars and everything, it sounds like the production sounds more full. So that intro, really, first of all, there's almost like two intros, because like there's like the carnival music,
yeah,
which is like weird, and then there's that bass intro with the drums. You're like, okay, this is cool, but it still sounds kind of faint. It sounds a little far away. And then when the verse kicks in and everyone's, you know, entered into the song, it really feels full. But I still think it has kind of that 80s a little bit. I don't know if it's the production or the guitar tone. Like, it is clean, and he's still playing things that definitely do give me, you know, shades of the Birds. But I do think with this song, it has a little bit of that 80s, which isn't bad. No. 80s is not my favorite decade of music.
Overproduce,
yes,
typically.
But with this band, it's not like that usually, like their 80s work, you know.
I just can't get over that this is like the fourth song we've covered, and the swagger that this band has, like the confidence that they have in these songs. And they should be confident. These are great songs. But they're primordial ooze at this point. Like they're just forming, and yet these songs are so mature.
Yeah, there's complexity, because even just looking at these three songs, like, I feel like this song is kind of a mix between the first two. It has the darkness that Wolves Lower has, you know?
Yeah.
But it has the catchiness of Gardening at Night.
Yeah.
And I think that's where my appreciation from the song has come from. Like, I think before, I was just like, oh, this is kind of another fast tempo rock song on the EP. But I, listening to like the dynamics, I'm like, there's a lot going on in this song. And lyrically too, I mean, even though we can't really pinpoint what the song's about, like even like with the beginning of the song, like he's singing these like, you know, kind of one word, two word phrases. Secret stigma, reaping wheel, diminish. And it's just strangers to these parts. It's like he's setting up. It's like he's writing for a movie. It's like he's watching a movie and transcribing it into lyrics.
Yeah.
And, you know, reading through the song, yeah, it's not super specific, and like I said, the chorus and the verses kind of repeat themselves, but you know, I still think that a song like this, you can get different interpretations. And this was one of those other songs where I saw some people's reactions online to it, people who heard the song when it was first released, and they had all different types of lyrics wrong. Like,
oh really?
They were singing different lyrics for some of like the verses and choruses, and then I've seen people say, you're never going to change my opinion on it. Like, this is how I will forever hear it in my head. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Like, and I know Michael, he said like those early songs, he's like, and I know for the 2008 tours before Accelerate came out, they were doing these early songs. There's a bit in one of the live shows where he actually printed lyrics from Google. He like Google searched the lyrics because he didn't know what they were like. He couldn't remember them. Holy and he shit. Was like, most of these are wrong.
Wow.
So even he's like, yeah, these aren't actually the words I sang. But that's, I think,
hilarious.
At the same time, he knows like, yeah, some of these songs didn't have direct meanings, you know? So.
Right.
But I do agree with you. Like, when you mentioned the confidence that the band has,
yeah,
that really pulls through with this song. And like you mentioned, Michael's vocals, they're kind of in that perfect range where
they are. This is sweet, sweet, sweet spot of Michael Stipe.
They're a little bit more audible, especially with Gardening at Night, the Chronic Town version. Like, it's really kind of hard to decipher what he's singing. Here it's a lot clearer.
Yeah.
But he still kind of gets to show off at the very end of the song, where he's kind of dragging out the very end where he's singing Out of Town. There's like the last couple of times where he really just draws out that note. And I think that's fantastic.
He's a very, very good singer.
And the song has a very interesting ending too. I don't know if you caught it. It fades as he's like kind of doing these long notes of him singing the word town. it's fading out. Bill's drumming is still kind of like chaotic, like in a good way. And it's a long fade out. Like it fades out for, I think, longer than like 10 seconds. But you actually can hear the band finish the song before the fade out's done. But they're still decreasing the volume. So it's interesting. Wow. Like it's a long fade out, but you can hear when like Bill does the final, like, you know, crash on the cymbal. Like,
yeah.
They finish the song, but it's still as they're fading out. And I think that's interesting because fade outs, in my opinion, sometimes could be a little cheesy, a little like, why can't you just finish the song? You know,
it's sort of an easy way out production wise, because, you know, if they're going to play it live, they're not fading it out. But yeah. I prefer to look at fade outs as a song just going on forever.
that's a great way to look at it. And there's some songs where it is like that. Again, I'm going to bring them up. Pearl Jam, their song Wishlist.
Yeah.
It ends with him going back into the chorus and the song fades out and he's still singing lyrics.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some of them are like very, like almost inaudible. And when they perform the song live, they will play the song like an additional 5 minutes of him just coming up, improvising lyrics. And in that sense, the song does kind of go on forever.
There's a song by Bell and Sebastian called Sleep the Clock Around that does the same thing. He's doing almost a whole other verse as the song fades out. And you have to really crank it to get what he's saying. But there's a part about a waitress and it's just really cool.
I like when a band like will do little details like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that great. To me is not lazy.
No.
I agree with you there. Like that's not lazy. That's actually creative. But yeah, like there's a lot of songs from like the 80s where it just fades out and you're like, you know the song has to stop, you know, when they play it live, like you said. I always go to Journey, Don't Stop Believing.
Right.
Like that song fades out, but I know there's a lot of live versions where they do the don't stop and then it's a hard cut and they just stop. And I kind of like, I wish you would have done that on the album version, the studio version. Like, that's cool.
I talked to a producer once and he said, it was very funny because I said, when you're cutting an album, are you at all thinking about how it's going to be arranged live? And he said, no. He said, I'm out to make the best record that I can make. And I don't fucking care what they do. He didn't say it quite so harsh, but he didn't care what they do, you know, once they go live with it, you know, like, so I thought that was really interesting. So some of these choices aren't always the band's choice, you know, especially early on when a band is young. Mitch Easter has some sway in the studio. So,
and I feel like a lot of bands' early stuff, like even REM, like, they probably were playing a lot of these songs live first before they got into the studio to record them.
Yeah.
So they're maybe thinking of the song as we're perfecting it while they're still playing it live. But like you said, the producer's like, no, I'm not thinking about a live setting at all. Like I'm here for the album.
Yeah.
And in this case, this song is great. I've underrated it for a long time. And maybe without even doing this podcast, I would not have found this, you know, appreciation for it that I do now.
One sec. Yes, Riley, I'm recording. You're going where? Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Do you want to finish your thought and then do you remember what you were saying? I'll use a noise gate and get rid of that, but
I think I was actually done. I think I just said that. I think I was kind of wrapping up saying that the song was. So actually, if you want to bring it in and do like a little wrap up, because that's kind of where I was heading us.
Okay.
Into, cool. Like final thoughts.
Well, Rico, that's pretty much what I have to say about Carnival of Sorts Boxcars. Have you got anything else you want to point out?
Well, actually, I now that you've said the full title, you know, we kind of left out the Boxcars part of it, but I did like do some research and, you know, about boxcars and the like Google definition was they're railway freight wagons.
Yeah.
And in this case, they're like used for like loading up all the carnival gear and moving them from town to town.
That's what I took it as too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that we kind of got a lot of the last line on the lyrics. That is the chorus, really. Like you were mentioning, Michael starts the chorus with him singing Boxcars, and then you get Bill and you get Mike doing that background, are pulling, and then he sings Out of Town right after.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's cool imagery. Again, just kind of bringing it all back to this kind of carnival theme. I think it's smart. And
yeah,
I like when songs have like kind of longer song titles and the parentheses and stuff like that. I think it adds sometimes.
It's cool. It's very REM as well.
Exactly. And yeah, I think this is a great song. And even if it doesn't have a ton of history, I think it's a classic.
What do you think out there, listeners? We're going to have an email address soon to provide for you, but we are on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram. So you can check us out there. I'll give you specific links in episodes to come. But connect with us. We're social. That's what we've got for you this week. So on behalf of Rico, this is JD saying, blink your eyes, and we'll be back. Thanks for listening to the REM Breakdown. For more information, visit our site at rembreakdown.com or send us an email at rembreakdown@gmail.com.